2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thanks for spending your Memorial Day with the KSL Greenhouse Show. This special edition sponsored by Olson's Greenhouse. Brian Lloyd is with us this morning. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis, taking your calls and questions at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Brian, I want to talk a minute about Olson's Greenhouse and tell folks that they can see your beautiful greenhouse right now on the KSL News Radio app, on the KSL webcam. If they just go to where you go to listen to the show, you can also go to watch the show, and that's where you will find our webcam. But you are a great local business, family-owned, and tell us a bit about your history.
Right. The webcam is here at our Salem, Utah location. We're also located in Santaquin and Lehi. We have growing facilities as well as in other states, but we've been a family business started by my great-grandfather-in-law, Roy Olson. Back in the 1940s, just in his backyard, he started growing bedding plants for the local community. So it's been a, you know, we're a fourth-generation family business, and we've been serving Utah and the surrounding states for that many, over 75 years now, and we're proud of that heritage.
So how in the world have you kept it together? Because we know that research shows that, you know, it doesn't usually go past a second generation with locally, you know, family-owned businesses.
You know, for
you
some reason.
You just love growing? What, you all have green thumbs?
Like, we all work great together. Actually, Bart Olson, our current chairman of the board, has five children, and all of those children and or their spouses work in the family business. So, first of all, we work great together, but we've been blessed to have enough business that we can also separate as well. So we have, you know, somebody that runs the Colorado operation, a different brother and sister that run the Idaho operation. We've all got our separate responsibilities, and that's helped us as well.
Well, Ton, you were talking about how you've been out to the greenhouse and how you were impressed with how they make sure that all the plants fit our local environment.
They do. They're grown here, so they're a little more adapted to our lower humidity and higher solar radiation, which is important. Because every once in a while, especially once we start to get warmer, if you're bringing plants in from out of state, that especially coming out of the Pacific Northwest, they can struggle and have some adaption problems as compared to locally grown plants, and so that's always good. But the other thing about this is that Olson's are helping keep the local economy growing. And when you buy Olson's plants, a lot more of that money stays in the local economy and benefits everyone as compared to things that might be shipped out or shipped in from across the country.
Brian, you provide plants for Costco, Walmart, Home Depot. This is usually the time of year when we're out at Home Depot with Container Fest. And I want to make sure that you mention that since we're not doing Container Fest this year due to the COVID pandemic, the great contest that you have going that's going to end in a week from now.
Right. We've replaced Container Fest with something that's even more fun, in my opinion. If you're into container gardening and you've planted your own container combination or even a monoculture container, post that on the Utah Gardeners Facebook group. Anybody can become a member. And so go to that Facebook group, Utah Gardeners, and join and post a picture of your container. We're giving away four weekly winners throughout the month of May. And then all the members of the group are going to select from those four who the best is. And at the end of the month, that grand prize winner gets a $500 shopping spree at Olson's Greenhouse facility, as well as a greenhouse tour of these amazing facilities. And we've partnered with Progressive Plants, Cameron Alcott, and they can also win trees and shrubs from Progressive as well.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines and take a call this morning from Jim and Sandy. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you for this wonderful surprise on such a holiday.
Well, thanks for listening.
I'm interested in miniature peach trees and wondering if they have miniature apricot trees. One of my neighbors has had for over 30 years a miniature peach tree that when I first saw it, as an adult tree. It was about 4 feet tall. I noticed the other day it's probably 6, maybe 7 feet tall. Not too sure how much the current tenant there or owner has taken care of it, but it's still growing, and I'm kind of curious because I never see them anywhere. How do I get one, and do they make a miniature apricot tree?
Well, miniature apricots are going to be much harder to find, but I know Stark Brothers carries one or two varieties of miniature apricot that would stay down to that 5, 6, 7 foot size you're looking for. And then the peaches, you can find them. They're still a little bit harder to find, but you can find them. Bonanza is going to be the most common dwarf peach out there, although there are others. And so Stark Brothers also carries dwarf peaches among other businesses. But I think Stark's on the apricot and peaches are probably sold out for the year.
How long do these trees usually last, Hon? We planted a dwarf apricot when we first built our home. It's been more than 30 years, but it didn't seem to last that long.
Well, anytime you plant a fruit tree with a dwarfing rootstock, it has reduced vigor. And what I've noticed with some of the rootstocks, that the peach I suggested, that Bonanza, is a genetic dwarf, and it's a little different. But when you have dwarfing rootstocks on peaches, if they have a hard winter like last year and you had just barely planted, those trees would be dead just because they don't have the vigor to just overcome. And so they're like, one dwarf rootstock I know of for peaches is called Controller 5. USU experimented with it, and we lost 40 to 50% of those trees in the first year or two of their planting. And that's with people that knew how to take care of them. And so I think the genetic dwarf peaches are going to last much longer just because it's a little bit different situation. But if you're planting a dwarfing rootstock type plant, you've got to be a little careful sometimes because of that reduced vigor.
Okay, next texter is asking, they have a boysenberry bush with black splotches on the canes. They live in Sandy. They say it looks robust and healthy, and they trimmed it up this year. What's going on there?
Well, they said that it's raspberry and it has black
boysenberry with black splotches on the canes.
Well, it could be a lot of things. Boysenberries are not completely hardy here, and so they may have winter damage on them. And so what will happen is that the boysenberries in a hard winter will send up a lot of root growth that looks wonderful, but there won't be any berries. And then the growth from last year is damaged, and you get very few to no berries, because once they get below about 10 degrees, they really don't like it. And we always do that every year here.
So if it looks robust and healthy, it could still not have fruit, maybe?
Correct. And so that would be newer growth, and that has not gone through a winter yet. So if we get a good snow load, a lot of times the snow protects the lower canes, and those will get berries on them and the upper canes don't. But boysenberries are always just a little bit of a gamble here because of the nature of just their cold hardiness.
Okay, so the plant might be okay, but you might not get your berries this year.
Correct. And the black splotches, winter damage would be the first thing I would look at. But that could be caused by a lot of different things.
Okay, let's take a call from Will in Draper. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
What is your question?
I was curious. I had 5 pine trees in my backyard. They were about 30 years old. And they died, all 5 of them. And I've seen on golf courses, a number of different golf courses, I've seen numerous trees that are dying and dead. And I'm just curious, what is it that's caused these? And it was kind of a blue spruce, or I say a blue spruce. It was blue. I don't know if it was a spruce. I guess it was. But just curious what is taking place.
Well, on your particular spruce, were they getting irrigation regularly?
Probably not.
That's probably what wiped them out. The spruce need to be deeply irrigated at least every 2 weeks, so water penetrates a foot into the soil. And when they don't get that, they can become very susceptible to what we would call engraver beetles, or different, like Ips beetle and different things like that. And those will knock the spruce out sometimes very quickly. Now, as far as on a wider scale, the two things I'm seeing that are generally knocking pine and spruce out are the bark beetles, like the engraver beetles, and on the pines, which are not spruce. Spruce and pines are two different things. The pines have been getting a lot of white and black needle scale in them, and that can also knock them out. But a lot of times the pines that are getting the scale are also not maintained well.
I see. Well, I was really disappointed to see five trees all across the back part of my lot all go out. And I guess it was probably water and, like you say, the different beetles that got in. But, yeah, I was thinking it was just my problem, but I've seen it on golf courses quite numerous locations.
Yeah, what's knocking them out is generally a combination of drought stress, scale problems, and engraver beetles. And so if you wanted to replace them, what you might be able to do are plant some junipers. The juniper trees are much more drought hardy, to where you might only have to water them once a month deeply, and you can get varieties of juniper that'll get up to 25 or 30 feet tall and would give you a screen, but they would be a lot easier to maintain than spruce.
Unfortunately, I'm 73, so I wouldn't live long enough to get them up high enough. What would you recommend or a privacy type of tree?
Well, you're going to need irrigation, even if you just run a hose with some drip lines on it or something. But if you wanted something to grow a little more quickly that wasn't just an utter junk tree, I might look at some either choke cherries, and those will require water. Though anything that's going to be a little bit faster growing is going to need regular irrigation. Canada red chokecherry will grow 2 or 3 feet a year, but it maxes out at about 30 feet, 25 to 30. If some other things that have a moderately fast growth rate would include hackberry, that would tolerate being watered less often once it was established, and maybe some hybrid elms.
How about flowering pear?
Oh, I'm hesitant because those are not really drought hardy. And they would work, but you would definitely have to have your irrigation in place. And I hesitate on those a little bit because they're just as common as mud. And if a disease comes through that's going to wipe them out, there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of subdivisions in trouble. And so the species I recommended would add some diversity and maybe help prevent some of that. But pears would probably do just fine.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us on this Memorial Day weekend, a special edition of the KSL Greenhouse Show on this Memorial Day, sponsored by Olson's Greenhouse. Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show on this Memorial Day, this special show sponsored by Olson's Greenhouse. And we appreciate you being with us and being able to answer your questions this morning. Have a lot of tree problems today, Ton. Let's go back to Wayne. Wayne is in Centerville, not back to Wayne, but good morning, Wayne. What can we help you with? You have a tree problem as well.
Good morning. I appreciate you taking my call. I have a 65-foot, 25-year-old ash tree that's going bald. And I don't know if it's just seen better days and it's time to move on, or if there's some remedy to bring it back to its full life.
Well, it's really tough because ash trees, which through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, even in the 80s, were great shade trees for Utah. Tolerated an alkaline soil. You know, they were fairly drought hardy. They were seedless, are seedless, and many of them are. And so we used a lot of them. And through the 90s, we started to see an increase of a borer called ash lilac borer that will go in and start to knock out a lot of limbs, you know, a few at a time on are ash trees. And in an older tree, what you'll see is that the foliage is half to three quarters there, and then about 25, 30, 40% of the branches are dead. And that's very typical of ash lilac borer. And there's really, besides preventative sprays, not much you can do because the systemic is in the wrong spot to be really effective against it.
I had a fellow come by last year and put some systemic borers into the tree, hopefully, you know, to stimulate a little bit, but it's still looking pretty sour.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just going to magically, you know, if the branches are dead, they're dead, you know, and it'd have to generate a lot of new growth. And it might be something that if the systemic you put in there didn't work and the dead continues to increase, that you are going to need to plant a new shade tree and get it going while you can still enjoy the other one.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like it's terminal time for the ash tree.
Well, I mean, you could get a professional arborist experience in diagnostics. You need to be a little careful because anybody can get a chainsaw. And you need to have a certified arborist that has diagnostic background. And if they can get up in there, and there may be something else going on, but I'm about 95% certain that ash lilac borer is causing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you said that's pretty hard to control, right?
It is, especially on a tree that's 50 feet tall. You could pay in the hundreds of dollars to have that tree treated every year.
Oh, boy. No, I guess I'm not going to try to do that. It's been a wonderful tree, and it puts out the red berries, and the birds love it.
So you have a mountain ash, not a regular ash, then?
Oh, is that a mountain ash?
If it flowers and has berries, it's mountain ash, yes. So I was assuming Fraxinus, which is ash tree. But you have, if you've got berries, if they're red berries, you've got mountain ash. And on this particular one, it's highly susceptible to fire blight. It's related to pears and apples. It doesn't look it, but it is. And it's very susceptible to fire blight. And so what you would need to do is prune those branches out and then make sure that you have a mountain ash. And then what you would do is follow the standard fire blight treatments in the spring to where you would spray the tree with a preventative when the flowers are out.
So what time of the year would I take care of that?
When you need to prune the dead branches out now.
Well, actually earlier in the spring, in March, I pruned a lot of branches out. Only a couple of them were dead, but I just kind of opened up the canopy there a little bit, and I took quite a bit of wood out.
Well, look, we're getting a little bit short on time, and so what I'm going to have you do is email some pictures of the tree over to your extension agent, Sheridan Hansen, and let her look and make sure that that is mountain ash. If it is mountain ash, I'm relatively certain you've got fire blight. But if it's a regular ash, then it's going to be ash lilac borer. But until we know what the tree is, I can't really help you.
Okay.
And so Sheridan Hansen is just S-H-E-R-I-D-E-N. Hansen @usu.edu.
Okay.
So all email some pictures over, but if it's mountain ash, I suspect you've got fire blight in there.
Okay. And what is the remedy for that?
Prune it out and spray the flowers in the spring with fire blight preventative, but get those pictures over to Sheridan to make sure that's what you have. But if you have a tree with red berries and it has ash in the name, it couldn't be anything else.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
All right, Wayne. Thank you so much for your call today. Our next texter is asking, and Brian, you're going to want to join in on this one. They're starting a school garden. They would like to plant both flowers and vegetables. Where can they find native Utah plants for the school garden? Brian, why don't you start on this one?
You know, a great source. We do grow several native varieties that have been hybridized, but they're still native. Things like penstemons that do well here, even though they're not the actual variety you can find up in the mountains. Also lupins and other things. But for true native varieties, I would go to the Jordan Valley Conservation Water Park, and they've got a source of suppliers. A lot of times these are little little mom-and-pop places that will grow native plants directly from our mountains or deserts that will do well here.
Okay. We've been watching on the KSL webcam, which is available on the KSL News Radio app on our website as well, of your beautiful nursery. I want folks to know, though, that you do a lot of educational stuff as well. You have a podcast, you do social media. So tell us about that, Brian.
Yeah, the best place to find us is at OGG.com for Olson's Greenhouse Gardens, and we have a blog there. We enjoy teaching people how to use bedding plants and to brighten their lives and their landscapes. So OGG.com is a great source. We also sponsor the podcast Dig in the Yard, D-I-G-G-I-N, The Yard. You can find on your favorite podcast player. But the best source for inspiration, if you've got an Instagram account, is to go follow us on Instagram. It's Olson's Greenhouse Gardens. And that's where we've got beautiful photography of all the greenhouses inside and beautiful landscapes outdoors as well.
Okay, you have a contest that ends next week. You better tell us about that before we run out of time.
Yeah, if you're a member of Facebook, join the Utah Gardeners Facebook group. And we're sponsoring a giveaway based on container gardening. So you just put your container gardens onto that Facebook group. There's a post on the announcements, and you can find out how to enter and win.
Okay, we need to say that this is something that you did in place of Container Fest, which is
right.
Usually what we do on Memorial Day weekend, is help people plant their containers.
Yeah, with social distancing, though, we've got still all the components in stores, so you can find all the great plants that Olson's Greenhouse grows to build beautiful containers or bedding plant beds. But build yourself a container, and if you'd like, go to the Utah Gardeners Facebook group and enter to win a shopping spree at the greenhouse and a garden tour of Olson's Greenhouse and our nursery down in Salem, Utah.
And people can find all of your wonderful plants at Home Depot, Walmart, and Costco.
That's right. We're shipping every day to all those stores, so you'll find us at any of those stores, Home Depot or Walmart, especially this time of year.
Brian,
you.
Thank you so much for making today's show possible. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for being with us, Ton and Maria. I appreciate it.
Thanks again. Ton, we just have a few seconds left. The person who wanted to plant the school garden also wanted to know the best vegetables. What would be your recommendation in the final few seconds we have here?
Green beans and tomatoes and beets would be three things that are very easy to grow.
And beets, that's one that I wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah, the beets, you plant them, you harvest them 45 to 55 days later, and they germinate well. And the school gardening is something we could bring up on another show, because there's a lot of goods and things to be, you need to look at. But yeah, beets are one of those that are kind of not looked at often, but they're quite easy to grow.
All right. Brian, Ton, let's get out in the garden now. Appreciate both of you this morning.
Happy Memorial Day.
Yes, same to you. KSL Greenhouse, again, brought to you today by Olson's Greenhouse. Boy, have a wonderful day. Be aware that our temperatures by the end of next week are up into the mid to upper 90s. Have a great day. Enjoy your Memorial Day.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.